Hey everyone, welcome back to the DDT Archives, your premier fan perspective wrestling podcast, going into the deep dives of the greatest moments, matches, events, rivalries, anything you can name of in old school pro wrestling. I'm your host, Greg. With me as always is my buddy Chris. What's going on, man?
What's going on, pal? How are you?
I'm doing all right. It's been a crazy week, but glad I had some time to work on the show and record our first episode, which you can catch on our website. That's still highspotslowblows.com, by the way. talking about the top 10 wrestlers that never won a world championship. Hope you guys enjoyed that. So here's part two of our return, I guess. But first, before we get into that, we're going to talk a little bit about the Austin Rock WrestleMania trilogy, which I'm really excited to get into. But since we last spoke, which has been a couple days, a lot's gone on. So we're recording this on a Thursday night. So obviously yesterday was like Black Wednesday, where just a ton of WWE talent got released amid the financial struggles, I guess you could say, from the coronavirus outbreak. So a lot of guys lost their jobs yesterday. It was a sad day. What were your thoughts on that, man?
I think overall it's sad that anybody loses their job during these times. It's unfortunately a reality of the situation. I thought they let go a lot of quality talent. Maybe not main eventers, but you have two guys that were in the premier match in WrestleMania with the OC. They were a prominent spot. You know, obviously Ryder and Hawkins being New York guys, we always deep down kind of like seeing them be successful, and you know, it sucks that they're out. It's tough. You know, you kind of, on a financial state, you understand why they're doing it, but, you know, it's hard to envision this not being only the beginning. I have a sneaking suspicion if this carries on a little bit longer that we're going to wind up with even more.
Yeah, it does suck, and it's sad, and you never want to see anybody lose their job, but when I, the more I thought about it, the more I'm thinking, like, what were they doing anyway? And I'm not discrediting anything, but you know what I mean? Like, a lot of these guys weren't on TV. They weren't doing much. You never, like, half of them, I forgot they were even still there. The Zack Ryder one hits a little close to home. My physical therapist actually is like friends with him and went to, like, grew up with him and in the same neighborhood on Long Island. So I thought that was funny. And we'd like to talk about wrestling when I used to see him, but as tough as it is, you know, it's just necessary measures, and it doesn't mean these guys aren't going to come back, or, you know, when this is all over, hopefully they catch on somewhere or they get brought back to WWE and have some success. But I just see it as, you know, I get the fan backlash, but I think it's a, are we that bored that we're overreacting so much to this? Like, it's this evil empire thing, and Vince McMahon is this vile human being, and the company is just terrible to their employees. And I don't know what goes on there, but this happens everywhere all the time. Just because it's public and it's performers you think you have this relationship with, it's no different than, you know, a final cut down day at the NFL level. It's no different than an aged baseball player getting released towards the end of his career. They cut dead weight, really. And like I said, it sucks, and it's for the individuals, but at the end of the day, it's also just business, and it's the sports world as a whole, whether it's the scripted sports or your regular sports, for baseball, football, hockey, whatever, you know. And then what about other companies? Like, look at my job, man. Like, I have 40 employees on my payroll. I have four left, 4. Like, I have 10% of my staff. Like, it sucks. And it's, you wish you could see these people, and some of these people have families, and some of these people have, like, everyone has responsibilities, but it's what's going on right now. And it's hard for everyone. And I don't think it's reasonable from a fan base to just kind of attack the company for making their decisions, because they're doing what they think they have to do. I'm not defending it, but it's just, I'm not going to get upset at a company over it. I feel bad for the performers, but not getting angry at, you know, the WWE as a whole. What do you think about that?
So I'm going to push back on you a little bit here.
Please.
So I think there are two main issues that I feel fans would be justified in arguing that this is a little bit outlandish in terms of numbers. You just had Vince McMahon dump how much money into the XFL, which just filed for bankruptcy. So it was a really poor financial decision, you know, and I actually liked the XFL. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was much better football than it was last time. But at the same time, you know, you took a huge hit there. Before that, you had them in a race to sign as many indie talents, top-level indie talents, as humanly possible. And you wind up with a stable of wrestlers that's in between the 200 and 300 number, and there's never going to be enough space for them. So when you do a mass cut like this, you go, well, why did they have to bring in so many people that they know they don't have time for? Yeah, some of the guys that were released have been there 10, 15 years, maybe even a little bit more. I got to be honest, some of them are super entertaining. I love Heath Slater. I think he is super talented, but is he going to get a shot in an AEW? I don't know. You know, in all honesty, I think Gallows and Anderson go back to New Japan. Only makes sense. And then, you know, who in that list is going to be immediately picked up by AEW other than the Revival? And that's a different kind of release. They'd been begging for it for months. So, again, it's a tough situation given the climate. But I think part of the backlash is brought on by the business practices of the WWE. For so long, they were a monopoly. Now they're starting to not be. But all of a sudden, when they stop acting like that monopoly, people are like, wait, what are you doing? You're cutting people now? And that's surprising. Let's be honest. You haven't seen a cut like this probably ever. You had a few years back, you had like 6 or 7 guys in a day, but not 20.
Yeah. No, you're right. You're right. I don't know. I just think it's, I think people are, I do think most fans are blinded by their hatred or of WWE, because all fans have bias. We all have our biases. It's fine. But I think that takes over, and it makes it easy to kind of push back at WWE for making business decisions that, yeah, it was a lot for one day, but these are probably cuts that were going to come like every so often if this were regular time anyway. So I don't know. I'm just not going to get my undies in a bunch over it. Moving on to a more somber note. Today we lost a legend in the ring, the greatest ring announcer that ever lived, the voice of my childhood and yours, and the soundtrack to every major event the WWE has ever held, and that's the passing of Howard Finkel. Very sad news today. What are any of your remembrances of the Fink?
So I don't remember what WrestleMania it was, but do you remember when Cy Sperling came out and the Fink got hair?
Yeah, that was 10. That was 10.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's the first one that pops out at me just because of how outlandish it was. But he was a guy, he was the first employee of the WWF. And, you know, he was a fan, and you could see the joy that he brought to what he did. You know, you just, his voice will forever be in our heads. You know, and ring announcers today are very talented, but they're not the Fink. You know, the Fink was a character on top of being a ring announcer. I don't see that today. You know, like Lillian Garcia in her prime was fantastic, but she still wasn't the Fink. You know, she was different. Talented, great to, you know, great in what she did. Justin Roberts, great in what he does, but not the Fink. And I think they would be the first to admit that.
Yeah, my memories of him is just how special it was, especially in like the 90s, how and the late as we got later on in the 90s into the early 2000s, how special it was when he showed up. Because he wasn't always there. You know, you had Tony Schimmel there for a long time, and when the Fink was there, and it was Lillian Garcia and Tony Schimmel was like those 2000s, but when you hit WrestleMania or another big event, there was the Fink, and you knew it was big time because he was there. And I'll still I, my favorite memory is I remember the being at WrestleMania 20 at MSG, and there he was, and the place went nuts. It was just so exciting and such a great moment to have him there. So, you know, rest in peace, the Fink. We're gonna miss you. You're the best to ever do it. And you know, Godspeed. Any other thoughts on that?
I think we covered it.
All right. So, all right. Moving on to what we do best is talking about the great history of professional wrestling. And this episode was kind of a little bit of a baby of mine. During WrestleMania season, I always liked to watch old Mania events. I know you like to do the same thing. But this year I just felt kind of different. I didn't want to sit through an entire show. And I went back and I was looking, I was like, let me see, let me look at some rivalries. And I went back and I watched Macho Man Hogan leading up to WrestleMania 5 when the Mega Powers exploded. I delved a little bit into Bret and Austin from 96, 97. And then when we decided to bring the show back, I was in the middle of watching Austin and The Rock. And I suggested it to you. You liked it. And it's such a special trilogy for WrestleMania. It's such a special rivalry for the history of the WWE. And I thought it'd be a lot of fun to cover. It's the two biggest stars of the 90s going head to head. So before we get into the specifics of it, what are your real true favorite memories of The Rock versus Stone Cold Steve Austin?
Their promos leading up to the matches, they both were great on the stick. They both got things over. The Rock just has that crazy charisma and outgoing style, and Austin is just, he's a badass. Nothing else to say about it, and they know how to sell an event, and it brings people, it makes people emotionally invested. You could tell when the main events hit that people were invested in both the story and the characters.
Oh, for sure. And you know, you think about it, it's the two most popular stars in one of wrestling's most successful eras. Those were the two guys. They are the ones that won the Monday Night Wars. It was their rivalry that put WCW out of business. It was their performance. And it's a special trilogy. I'm going to ask you, I love my trivia questions, right? So there's the one of two WrestleMania trilogies in history. What's the other one?
I'm thinking off the top of my head. Killing me on this one.
That's why it's a trivia question.
I know. I don't know.
Okay.
You know, part of me wanted to go Michael's Undertaker, but that was
Those
only
two.
two.
Oh, we got one of them right. It is The Undertaker, and he faced Triple H three times at Mania.
You know, I almost said that too,
Yeah.
but I could only think of two of them.
So it was 17, 27, and 28 was when Triple H and The Undertaker faced off at Mania. So, I mean, that spanned 11 years. This one was 3 times in 5 years. That's crazy to me. And,
It is. I
right?
mean, a company's putting, for, forget that it was three times, it was two main events.
Yeah.
Like, and that's a risk. Like, you're half of why you buy a WrestleMania is because you're seeing something that you haven't seen before. You know, and you put a main event on that's the same, there's got to be some risk to that. Now, paid off. It's a great match, but that's definitely not a normal practice.
No, for sure. And so the first match goes to is at WrestleMania 15 that took place in Philadelphia in 1999. And the backstory for that match is insane. That goes back over a year. You can trace it back to Austin eliminating the Rock was the last elimination of the 98 Rumble. And they had matches against each other for the Intercontinental title before they rose up to main event status. But it's just wild. And when you really think about it, the build to this match at 15, there's so much going on. Because when you think about it, The Rock only won the title about 6 weeks before Austin and him faced off at WrestleMania. Because he was playing hot potato with Mankind from December until the end of February. And he won it in a ladder match on Raw. And then they started going into the WrestleMania build. And Austin's greatest, like maybe arguably his greatest rivalry is with Mr. McMahon. And that dominated 1998 into 1999. So when you think about it, this first match, it's almost got too much going on that, and we'll get into some of the specifics. Breaking it down, but it really was almost it was about a lot of different people. And when I typically think of a WrestleMania main event, I think of it's the one-on-one. It's those two guys facing off. And here I felt that there was almost a lot of distractions where it took away from the one-on-one matchup. What do you think about that?
I mean, the whole thing, it is a long arcing storyline. There are a lot of players tied into it, even within the event itself. You have Big Show versus Mankind to be the special referee. Obviously, Mankind gets taken out. Then you have Michaels and McMahon. And then you wind up having Kyoto come out and referee. And then you wind up with like three or four different referees within a match. It's just. It's good storytelling, but it's a very complex story in one that may not be necessary.
Yeah, you know, exactly. And that's what I felt took away from this match. And I'm not a huge fan of this one because of that part of that. And then the other part is they spent a little too much time outside of the ring. That first half of that match, they're on the outside, they're on the stage, they're on the announce area, they're outside of the ring. And I just felt that those two guys are too good in the ring, like the midst of a match to just, I know Austin's a brawler, but it almost was overkill for me in that match by the time they finally got in the ring. Any thoughts on that?
I told you when we were watching that I wasn't a fan of them fighting into the crowd.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't something that was common then. You could see that security had no idea what to do, especially on the first side that they went in. You know, fans are all over the place in the way, no good camera angles, people can get hurt. It's just, it wasn't necessary. What I will say is, the crowd was invested in this match from the jump. I mean, Rock had that split crowd entrance, you know, and then you had Austin, who comes out, and the ovation was absolutely enormous. And what's funny is I read an article recently about how mad Austin was because he forgot his vest because he was dealing with his divorce.
Yeah, and he came
And
out in
as a
this
result,
t-shirt.
he had to come out in a t-shirt. And who the in his own thoughts, who the hell comes out in their own t-shirt at WrestleMania? Like, he needs to be full gimmick, and he wasn't, and he was really upset about that.
Yeah, I mean, it just, and the other thing too, at this era right now, like during this time, so you're talking about late March, April 99. Did this match and this event, it just reeked of Vince Russo? Am I right or wrong?
It had it in there. I'll tell you what bothered me the most about this match out of anything. It's a no DQ match. Why is Mike Chioda counting? There is nothing to count. There are no rules. There are no disqualifications. Why are you giving a five count over and over and over again? And better yet, why are the guys releasing the hold?
But that's what I'm talking about. Like that whole thing before, even before the match gets started, right? And you alluded to it before. They had you have JR coming back, which is a great moment. JR comes back to sit at the table and call the match after, a bout with Bell's palsy. Then Vince comes out after the whole Mankind Big Show debacle and announces himself as the guest referee. Then you have Shawn Michaels come out, who was the commissioner at the time, saying that only he is allowed to name a referee for the match. And here comes Mike Chioda. And it's like this thing, it takes forever. It was so long. It was like an opening of Raw length promo. Like, it was so unbelievable how long it took them to finally get to the match. Now, at this time, there's no hype video. They saved that for 17, thank God. But it's like you said, it's just there's just so many moving parts to this match that almost didn't need it. And you can argue that at the time, The Rock wasn't even Austin's best rival. It was McMahon, right? So, I mean, I understand they faced off against each other back like April of 98, and they had the match at St. Valentine's Day Massacre, the cage match where the Big Show debuted, like all leading up to this. But it's just, like I said, I just felt there was so much confusion and just out there stuff, and it's just overdone so much that it took away from the match itself. And Austin comes out on top. He wins the title for the second straight WrestleMania, finally besting McMahon after months and months and months of battling. But any final thoughts on the WrestleMania 15 match?
Yeah, how about Chioda taking that crazy chair shot to the head and leaving that ridiculous dent in the chair? And it does not age well whatsoever. And Chioda's another one of those guys that got released yesterday. And that one actually hit home. I love Mike Chioda refereeing, other than when he counts when he's not supposed to. But that's okay. I'm sure Vince was in his ear telling him to.
Poor Tim White getting a rock bottom for his troubles too.
I take a rock bottom over a chair to the head.
That's fair. That's fair. So then we move on. We'll move on to the next one. And this one's unique. WrestleMania 17 is unique because Austin was out at the end of 99. He finally had to get his neck worked on, dating back to the pile driver he took from Owen Hart at SummerSlam in 97. And he would miss 9 months. He went out in November. He got hit by the car at Survivor Series, and he would miss WrestleMania the following year. And you could tell that his presence was missing because that WrestleMania is a disaster. And he would make his official return in October at the Unforgiven pay-per-view, go on to win the Royal Rumble in 2001. The Rock would eventually beat Kurt Angle at No Way Out, and that sets up the rematch at WrestleMania 17. I always felt that, going back and watching the build to this one, this is what I wanted out of the first one. they got all the superfluous junk out of the way, and it really was about the two of them. It had a lot of juice to it. The Rock was a bona fide superstar. Austin was had the good story of him on the comeback trail from a near career-ending injury. They had a good angle with his then-wife, Deborah McMichael, you know, being ordered to be The Rock's manager. And then I watched today, you know, in preparation for this, it was a great sit-down interview conducted by Jim Ross in the locker room. Have you seen that?
No, I don't think I have.
They show it in, like, the Limp Bizkit hype video a little bit. But it's about a week before WrestleMania, and it is just, it's terrific. And then you had, you know, the go-home SmackDown before WrestleMania. They had what you really see is them cheersing beers harder at each other, and then finally it comes to blows. And you just, that match hit that fever pitch. You had the Limp Bizkit My Way video, which is probably the best hype video of all time. Now every, you know, podunk undercard match has a hype video. This is where it really meant something, and it got you fired up. And you just wanted these two guys to beat the crap out of each other. So before we get to the match itself, what do you think about this build to WrestleMania 17, you know, 2 years later?
So the first thing that I wrote down was about the hype video itself. Mm-hmm. I forgot how big of a Limp Bizkit fan I was.
They were great.
Like, I heard that song and I was like, whoa, I love it. I haven't heard it in forever. It's a great song. It aged okay. You know, sometimes you hear stuff from then, it's like, why did I like that? But I got hyped. You know, I thought you know what? I did see the sit-down interview now that I think about it, because I have notes here that said I did. It was a great sit-down interview, and the chemistry between the two of them is crazy.
You can see, again, not to interrupt you, but do you see, like, how you really see there how much The Rock had matured and grown over those 2 years since their last encounter, right?
Yep.
Oh, love
it. You know, I don't. Here's my one issue going into the match. The stipulation's identical. The no DQ again. And I get why they did it. It adds to the story. But I think you can find something different so that it's not the exact same thing. Other things that stood out before the match even gets started is Austin's new theme music.
The Disturbed one that we all forgot about. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, wait, what? What is happening? And then he came out. Again, the music then was fantastic because you had a lot of these big time bands crossing over with wrestling. You know, you have Undertaker coming out to Roland. Like, all of that stuff was real. And it was cool. I really enjoyed that piece.
Oh, for sure. And I always felt like this match, and it really is, and I know you're not a Star Wars guy, but this is the Empire Strikes Back of the Rock Austin trilogy. It really is. It's the best one, and it's got a twist ending that you didn't see coming, and it's my favorite one because they did what I wanted them to do the first time around, like you said. They went outside a little bit, but they really went at it hard in the ring to start the match. And this match had a little bit of everything. There's blood. They're both going for submissions. They're just trying so hard, not just to beat the other guy, but to really win. So, you know, The Rock's going for sharpshooters. Austin pulls out the $1 million dream, which he hadn't used in forever. And they hit each other's finishers on each other. You know, that was just a great little, you know, bonus. But The Rock had a terrible stunner, though, right?
Yeah. It was almost as bad as when the table broke itself.
Yes.
I was not a big fan of the table breaking itself. Somebody did not put it together well. It was cool that they did all this stuff, but it didn't have that I have to get my stuff in feeling that you get today watching certain things where you're like, oh, clearly he just has to make sure he gets his three flips and a dive. It was everything had a psychological reason for it to be in the match.
That's what I mean, and that's a great point because it felt like you said, they're not just trying to get their stuff in. They're trying to win by any means necessary. They're trying to win the match. And I love that psychological stuff. That's what makes wrestling great to me. It's theater. And things have to make sense. And I get it that when you've tried everything, oh, well, I as well try the other guy's move. I've tried everything else. It all makes sense. And it makes it exciting because you're just like, what do these guys have to do to win? And ultimately, what they would have to do to win is make the deal with the devil. And a lot, and our hero, Stone Cold Steve Austin, aligns himself with Vince McMahon at the end of this match. And after a chair shot to The Rock's head, and he finally gets the pin, and him and McMahon shake hands in the middle of the ring, and you don't know what's going on. And how'd you feel about that ending?
So here is the coolest thing about it, and you don't see it today. Not only did the fans turn on Austin, but they also turned for The Rock. So it wasn't just them booing Austin. They were cheering everything The Rock did after that. When he kicked out of the stunner, the crowd went crazy. And you don't see that today where you have that full turn in the middle of a match. You know, people just boo the bad guy. Very rarely do you see that positive cheer go to the other guy.
Yeah, but to piggyback off that, it wasn't like they were booing Austin though. That crowd had they started cheering for The Rock, but I think they were just cheering for both of these guys because of the tremendous effort they were putting out. When Austin hit The Rock with the chair and got the chair from McMahon, I think on TV it played better because the announcers, you know, JR has just a way about him to seal a moment. I think the crowd there, it was weird. You know, it's a heel turn at the end of a WrestleMania in Texas for Stone Cold Steve Austin. I don't think the crowd re actually realized what was going on, or at least couldn't comprehend it. It was, and I don't know if it got the reaction in the building that it was aiming to get, because when he hit The Rock with the chair and got the pin, the place went nuts. And then he's shaking McMahon's hand. They're just very, I think we were all confused watching it. I remember watching that one at your house. So what do you think about that just from the point of the live, just put yourself in their shoes of the live crowd. How do you think you would have reacted to that?
I probably would have been puzzled.
Yeah.
You know, but at the same time, it's wrestling. You expect the unexpected. And you knew the story had to be different. It had to be.
Yeah.
It's the same stipulation, it's the same main event. There has to be a swerve. If there isn't, then they're not doing their job. What that swerve could be, you didn't know. Would it be a third guy coming out to insert himself? Would it be, you know, like something like that? And it wound up being the handshake with Satan himself. And that to me was a great moment in history because it now began a different story. And this rivalry can continue on with a completely different story for it.
Oh, that's a great point. That's a great point. And I didn't really I was I'm torn about it because I definitely give them credit for making a risky and creative decision at that time, but moving forward, I don't know if it essentially worked because I think Austin's presence, it was at the just his whole career arc in WWE. It would be hard for anybody to sit there and legitimately jeer him. And he worked hard to try and get that heel character over, and he did a lot of great stuff, but I don't think it worked as well as it could have. And I think it's just the fans just weren't going to buy into it. It's like, we're not going to boo this guy. We love this guy. He's the reason we're here. Why are we going to hate on him? You know what I mean?
So I also think he would have gotten over a little bit more as a heel if Triple H doesn't get hurt.
Yeah, they were starting to gain some
When
traction,
they
right?
were aligned and they were the bad guys, people were not okay with Austin. Once Triple H was hurt and injured and that, with the torn quad, then all of a sudden now it's just Austin again. And then yes, fans will flock to him. And as well they should. He was such a talent that it was crazy.
Yeah, that was that's a great point. That's a really great point. You kind of forget about that because it was so short. It was such a short time, and then Triple H gets hurt and things go awry. So, any final thoughts on the WrestleMania 17 match before we move on to their final encounter?
No, I'm good for right now.
Okay, awesome. So then finally we have the final battle that would take place 2 years later at WrestleMania 19 in Seattle. The road to here is very interesting, I always thought, because Austin had a weird 2002. You know, he would face Scott Hall at Mania when the NWO came back. In June, he would, quote unquote, take his ball and go home when he refused to lose to he refused to lose to Brock Lesnar in a King of the Ring qualifying match. He wouldn't come back until the following February. The Rock's off doing his Hollywood thing, filming the Scorpion King. He would eventually lose to Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam that year, lose the championship, an event we were at. That was my first pay-per-view I ever attended. That was a great show. We'll cover that one day. And he would also come back the same month in February. And he's all Hollywood now and being this Hollywood elitist. He's a big-time movie star. And the wrestling world is beneath him. And I love the backstory to this match is the as The Rock hated that Austin won Superstar of the Decade, and he became obsessed with the fact that he never beat Austin at WrestleMania. So you kind of get the feeling that this is going to be maybe The Rock's year. And it just sucks because Austin was just riddled with injuries. The rumors floating around that this was going to be his final match. So this kind of end of an era thing. What were your thoughts going into this one?
Is there anything better than a heel Rock promo?
No.
I put heel Rock promo in this era against like a Piper in the 80s, and they're so entertaining. The fact that he's just so arrogant. I sell out every WrestleMania. I couldn't care less about the people. One thing I've never done is beat Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania. This is the last chapter of the greatest rivalry. And it's like, he believes it all. That's, yes, it's a gimmick, but it's also not.
It's not.
In his mind, this was the greatest rivalry of all time. And you can make an argument that it is. I'm not saying that it's not. I'm not saying that it is either. I think there are some that we could have a great debate about. But it was very clear he needed something out of this. And coming back from Hollywood, his ego was bigger, and I thought it fit.
Oh, for sure. And then, when the real life takes a turn the night before, Austin's in the hospital with an accelerated heartbeat. That's a terrifying story. And thinking about that, it's that ma the match itself is a little hard to watch for me, looking back on it, knowing what you know now. Austin's definitely had lost a step or two going into that one. Especially if, like, for us who watched I watched their first two matchups like right away, like 3 in a row, and you just see him getting a little rusty, and he looked like he had aged a decade in 2 years' time, and it took so much out of him the night before. But much res always had respect for Stone Cold for working his butt off to try and get a great match. But it was still sad to watch. So, what were your thoughts about this match?
So the first thing that stands out about the match itself is JR is such a Stone Cold cheerleader, it's not even funny. That's his guy. And in some ways it helps the show, and in other ways it kind of takes away. Because it was, you're right, it was clear that there was a step or two difference, and the way JR is talking, it's almost like Austin didn't lose a step or two, and it's, hey, don't tell me how stupid I am as a fan. You know, say he's overcoming all of this to give you this. And that, if he says that, you're like, yeah, you're right. He's giving us everything he's got, knowing that he's was in the hospital last night. He's, you know, his back is done. It is very hard to listen to. Only for that reason. And I don't know if it would have been as hard to listen to if I didn't know what will happen as a result. Knowing that Austin's career is essentially done in ring. If that wasn't the case, maybe I have a slightly different point of view on the announcing. Waller and JR together are great. Some things in the match that stuck out. And there's, it's so little and so silly, but I caught it in all three. They're always drinking water. There's always a water bottle strategically placed, and they're always drinking
You got
water.
to stay hydrated.
It was weird to me because it was so obvious. I did like when The Rock put on the
That
vest.
was great. I did. I love
I
that.
thought that was fantastic, but the matches themselves felt very similar. You know, same moves, same order, and you know, doing each other's finishers again. You know, it started to get repetitive, and I'm sure part of that is because of the situation where Stone Cold is at, and he's limited, but at the same time, like, I thought the stories were very similar, and I think this is my least favorite of the three,
That's fair.
because of that. Because I felt, and maybe if I hadn't watched them all back to back to back, it may have been a little bit different. But you know, if there's a 2 year gap, I don't notice that they're the same match.
Yeah, when there's a 20-minute gap, it's
Yeah, it's like, oh, they just did that, and they just did that, and I'm like, okay. Yeah,
what we
so
have to do
that
is that's what we have to do as fans is to like, you try your hardest when you're when especially when you're doing like a podcast like ours, because we do a lot of different stuff and over the years that we've done it, and you kind of have to when you're doing research, you have to compartmentalize a little bit. You can't just, it's, and I know it's really hard, but you gotta separate, okay, this is this separate, this is it. Like you kind of have to factor in the time spans of what you're watching. For me it was, and this is an interesting stat. I know during the build up to this match, it was The Rock saying that he had never beaten Austin at WrestleMania, but the fact was he had never beaten Austin clean in his career. I looked it up, and Pro Fight Database is great. It's like the IMDb of wrestling, and you can look up every like all these matches and every like guy's opponents, and it pulls it up at the touch of a fingertip. The Rock never beat Stone Cold until that night, and it's you find that hard to believe with them how many times they faced off on the biggest stages they faced off, and it's just. It's amazing. And you look at, and then on the Austin side of it, talk about a guy that retired and stayed retired. How rare is that?
Well, I think part of that is a lot of that is he didn't have a choice.
Yeah, but okay, that's fair. But how many other guys didn't have a choice? We heard that about everybody.
Yeah.
Like, come on, like, but that, like, that really, he stayed, that was his last match. And the last memory we have of him saying goodbye to that Seattle crowd. And it's a lasting image, and it's a somber image, but why not go out losing to the guy that you helped make a star? that, knowing what we know now, looking back, what's that? God, what was that? 2003. So we're looking back 17 years. What The Rock has become, the legend of Austin has grown, because we can have this argument all day. Nobody's been able to do that since what he did. And it's the that I think even more so than like Vince's famous speech about like he's looking for ruthless aggression, that or the night WCW died. That wasn't the end of the Attitude Era. This was really the end of the Attitude Era, because it was these two guys, the cowboy riding off into the sunset, and the movie star getting one more round to shine in the spotlight. What are your thoughts about that?
I think the ending is what needed to happen with, I like that it took three rock bottoms. It was, they made sure that it was clean. It's obviously a somber moment in retrospect, seeing such a great career come to an end. But at the same time, how many times have we said with an older wrestler, I wish they just would have stopped? And, it wasn't his best match, but it wasn't his worst match. And he went out, giving the crowd what they wanted. They wanted to see him give his best. He gave his best. In some ways, the legend of Steve Austin is the legend of Steve Austin because he did leave and not come back.
Nah, for sure. Absolutely. Absolutely right. So, just a few final thoughts. So where you're as about as great a good of wrestling historian as I know. Where does this rivalry stack up with the other great rivalries of in history?
So, I was actually, I want to say a week ago, I tweeted RJ about the Flair Steamboat trilogy in '89. And now that's obviously a little bit different because it was a trilogy within 1 year across three pay-per-view or two pay-per-views and a clash. And it was awesome because all three were very different story-told matches. There wasn't a lot of repeating. That to me will always be one of the greatest rivalries in wrestling. Ric Flair, Dusty Rhodes, another one. Michaels and Bret Hart. This is
Those,
definitely up there,
yeah.
because of their mega stars.
But those last two you mentioned are like the ones that spanned years, and really like they would move on, and then it would always come back to those two guys. And I think that's what made those rivalries so special. That's what made the Rock and Austin's rivalry so special. But is it their greatest one with each other? Because I'll say this. I know that Austin's greatest rival was Vince McMahon.
Yes, in storyline, but not in the ring.
Okay, but
So
what's the
I
difference?
think
Like it's the same TV show. They'll
yes, but at the same time, I want to be able to see people work. Like that's what that storytelling in the ring is just as important as the storytelling on the stick. And yes, the Austin McMahon feud was awesome because McMahon had so many other people fighting his battles for him, including The Rock. So it's different. It's definitely a great rivalry, but it's not the same as a true in-ring rivalry. As much as Vince will get in there and bump around for people, it's not the same thing. It really isn't. I mean, look at the Hogan McMahon match. It was awful.
Yeah.
So bad. So bad. And not for a lack of effort, it just was awful. So yeah, there are great stories. And in a lot of times I'll be the first one to admit I prefer the story piece, but in the rivalries that we're talking about, the in-ring rivalry is that is that important.
But then, okay, then let's go on The Rock for a second, because obviously his rivalry with Austin made his career, but I feel like his rivalry with Mick and then ultimately becoming tag team partners down the road, but I don't think he gets to that point against Austin without that stepping stone of his rivalry with Mankind. And I love that one too. And it's all in the middle of all of this, which is great. But I think he doesn't get to this point without having those just physically brutal matches with Mick Foley. What do you think about that?
I agree with you. But at the same time, what made him, those matches made him a star.
Yeah.
What made him a mega star was Austin.
Yeah, exactly.
It took him to a whole nother level.
Hmm. You know, and then you look back at Austin's legacy, obviously the most popular, one of the most popular performers in the history of that company. And when you look at the, you know, this is the last note I had, but it really is a short time span. When you look at other top stars that have been in the WWE, like, you know, the Undertaker's going on 30 years. Triple H has been there 25 years this year. Michaels was there forever. Bret was there forever. The Rock has been there forever. And Austin had, it was 8 years. That was the Austin era. And 7 WrestleManias. That's it. You know, Hogan headlined the first 9. And it's just like, when you think about it, it's just what he was able to accomplish in what, compared to other guys, is such a short time span, is absolutely remarkable.
Take it a step further. He did all that after almost being paralyzed.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
You know, the fact that all of that came after the fact is the craziest part of the whole thing.
Yeah.
Austin's talent was always there. You saw it with Stunning Steve. You saw it with the Hollywood Blondes. You saw, the guy's the only one that could possibly have kicked out of the Ringmaster gimmick and still recover. With that being said, he overcame everything. And I think that's why the fans loved him so much, is they knew that to get to where he was, he had to overcome that. And that always, fans always get behind the injured superstars. You know that.
Oh, yeah.
You know? And it was, you know, yes, it was a short run, but it was a great run. And, you know, again, he left where people wanted more, and that's better than leaving when people wanted less.
Well, can't put a better ending to that one with a statement like that. So, moving on. So our next episode, we'll talk about our next episode coming up. We will be covering Starrcade 85, The Gathering. So just a little bit of a preview. What do we got to look forward to for our next installment? Talk about Starrcade 85, buddy.
Gimmicks, gimmicks, and more gimmicks. You're looking at Magnum TA and Tully Blanchard, two of the best. Then we talked about them in our last episode, about guys that never held the title. You have Dusty Rhodes and Ric Flair in one of the biggest feuds of all time. You get the Rock and Roll Express in there. You have the Raging Bull Manny Fernandez. I thought it was a great card looking at it. It definitely was a little bit better than I thought it would be when I went back and rewatched it. You know, part of me, I just love old wrestling, but it doesn't always age well. I thought most of these matches did.
You gotta,
so it'll be fun to talk about.
Yeah, you gotta, like, it's a slow burn in this event, because you gotta wade through a few matches of crap before you get to the real meat on the bones in this one. And it's an event that's not for the faint of heart. If you don't like blood in your matches, don't watch Starrcade 85, because it's every match is freaking blood in it. Spoilers. But I'm looking forward to covering it. I had never seen it before, so I love going back and watching stuff that I had never experienced, and because it's new to me. So even though it's classic, it's something I never was able to get to see and to break it down and look at it. So I'm looking forward to covering that on our next show. Once again, you can find us on Twitter at DDT Archives. Hopefully, by the time this airs, we'll be on iTunes, and I'll keep you guys posted on that on our social media. So, what's your Twitter handle, buddy?
I gotta look it up again.
Ah!
At Chris underscore DDTHSLB, because after all, it has to be the longest name ever.
It's fine.
So yeah, give me a follow because I deleted my Twitter. Well, no, let me rephrase. I have 2,300 followers on my football account. I have 3 followers on my wrestling account. So I'd love to get that number up.
Yeah, so throw them a follow, guys. And but you can also find our shows at our website, highspotslowblows.com, and download the show directly from there. So thanks again for checking us out, right here on the DDT Archives. We'll see you next time, everybody.